I'll just have a give a brief introduction of everyone. Our bold leader is Bob Bly, who I'm sure everyone knows, who's author of over 50 books on direct marketing and a number of other topics. And we have also Sandy Franks, who is Agora's secret marketing weapon and very experienced and competent direct marketer. We have with us Ken McCarthy, who is an internet pioneer and was originally a student of Gene Schwartz's. And also we have the legendary Jay Abraham, who really needs no introduction. I'm sure everyone is familiar with him. He's famous for totally turning around the Entrepreneur magazine into the big business it is now, and many other businesses, including Agora. And Bob, I'll let you take it away.
Great. Ken, you had the most personal involvement with Gene. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to meet him and what your relationship was and what you two did together?
Absolutely, and it really talks to the kind of person he was, which I think is an important topic for us as we get later into this call. Here's how I found Gene. I was trying to get a copy of Mail Order, which was a collection of interviews he did for Boardroom. And the book was out of print. This was in the pre-internet days, so there was no easy way to get it. So I wrote Boardroom and I said, hey, you know, do you have any extra copies lying around? Never heard from them. Figuring, hey, they're busy. Went into a black hole. Well, the day before Thanksgiving, a package arrives, and in the package is a copy of this book, a mail order, from Gene Schwartz with a letter wishing me well. Now, you have to understand, he didn't know me from Adam. This was just a random act of kindness on his part, which bowled me over. At the time, the price of that book was a significant amount of money to me. I think all of us can remember when 50 bucks was a lot of money, and it was a tremendous gift. So I wrote him back, and I thanked him. I made a donation to a charity of the same amount, let him know where the money was going, and that began a correspondence between us. We actually shared an interest in learning, in teaching people how to learn. I owned a company called Optimal Learning in the 1980s, which taught people how to read faster and remember and think more clearly. And, of course, Gene wrote many books on that subject and integrated a lot of that information into his copy and his approach to advertising. So we were correspondents for years, and it was one of the great highlights of my working career as an advertiser.
Now, you said in an email to me a few days ago, Bob, I spent the weekend rereading Gene's book, What a Masterpiece and a Perfect Antidote to the Paint-by-Numbers School of Copywriting that's become so popular these days. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, sure, and it's natural that in a teaching environment, you'd want to make things as simple as possible for people, one, to give them confidence that they can actually learn it. But the reality is, and people that read Gene's book and watch the videotape, the reality is to write really good copy, and that's what these calls are about. This is not about, you know, run-of-the-mill copy or good enough copy. This is about breakthrough copy. This is about wading into really competitive fields and coming out the winner. If you want to do that, you've really got to stretch, and you've really got to become a serious student of the game. And so I think the timing for this book to come out again and for this course at this particular time is perfect, because, you know, everything ebbs and flows, and I think we've had a long period where people have, a lot of folks, not necessarily wrongly, have been oversimplifying the copywriting process, making it seem like, gee, just do a few things, copy somebody else's work, smooth it over a little bit, and put it out there and you'll do fine. And of course, Gene had the exact opposite approach to copy. He really believed every single piece of copy needed to be originated from scratch, and the copy had to flow from the product and from the market.
Interesting. Now, you are known as an internet specialist. Do his techniques apply? Breakthrough advertising was written before the internet, and the word web and internet are not mentioned in the book. Does this stuff still apply to the internet, and is it as important online, or is it less important than it is offline?
It's as important. It's the same game. By the way, I was a mailer long before the internet came along, so I did have some experience with direct mail and the idea of writing 5- and 6-figure postage and printing checks and hoping that your letter was good. So, but in terms of the internet, the business that I'm in now that I'm focusing on the most is teaching people how to use the internet for marketing. I've been doing that since 94. In fact, we were the very first people ever to give a seminar on that subject. And dealing with that marketplace, I would not have been able to deal with it had it not been for this book and for Gene's thoughts. That marketplace has gone through such unbelievably radical changes. I mean, look what I've had to deal with. Starting off, nobody knew what the internet was. That's when I got into the business. You'd say internet, and people would go, inner what? Then they would tell you, that was the first generation. So I had to write ads around that. The second generation was, you can't make money on the internet. That's impossible. Bill Gates says you can't do it. Steve Jobs says you can't do it. What makes you think you can do it? So that was the second generation. Then the third generation was, gee, people are making money. Gee, this is easy. Gee, you don't really have to think. Just throw anything up there and it's going to work. So that was the third generation. Fourth generation, of course, was the dot-com crash, when people went back to saying, it's all a bunch of hooey. You can't really make money on the internet. So just in the space of 10 years in this one little business, I've had to go through four major sea changes psychologically in the marketplace, and I've had to adapt my copy each time. I couldn't do it without Gene. I just couldn't have done it.
Well, let's start with the general, and I'll do this with the other guests too, but I'll do it with you first and then move to the specific. What can you give an example of either the greatest or what you think is one of the most important lessons in copywriting that you've learned from Gene?
Bottom line, the most important thing, and I hope everybody really listens to this on this call, because it will save you endless grief, it will speed your progress, and it will make you a ton of money. And here it is. We don't create demand. We channel existing demand. Okay, so, you know, we're not out there paddling in our canoes. We're sailors, and we put up the sail, and we let the wind take us. So many businesses, large and small, sophisticated and unsophisticated, make the fatal mistake of trying to ram a product down the throats of a market because they think it's a great product. It never, ever works, and it always leads to tears. What does work and what produces phenomenal results is getting to know the demand and the need and the wants and the dreams and the desires of people, and then crafting products that satisfy those needs and crafting ads that speak to those needs. Gene makes a great comparison between being an ad copywriter and an atomic scientist, which is really a stretch unless you think about it a little bit. The atomic scientist doesn't make the power of the atom come into being. He simply utilizes something that's already there. And that's what we do as copywriters. We're not making anything happen. What we are doing is we're finding a force, a power, a demand, and we're channeling that existing demand, and that's where our money comes from. So that's the most important lesson, I think.
Yeah, I tell people, in my opinion, the key insight, although there's a lot to the book, is that, and it's like the second or third sentence in the first chapter on page 3. He says, quote, copy cannot create a desire for a product. It can only take the hopes, dreams, fears, and desires that already exist in the hearts of millions of people and focus those already existing desires onto a particular product. This is the copywriter's task, not to create this mass desire, but to channel and direct it, which seems like a simple insight, but I think most of the people on the call would agree that, for example, in much of general advertising in Madison Avenue, that's either an unknown or an ignored principle, or it's not believed.
Absolutely.
Now, Jay, your introduction to Gene was what? You had mentioned to me that you had him work for your company for a day, or
this is long ago, but it was an indelible impression on me, Bob. He consulted with me years and years ago. I'm talking about in the late 70s when we were doing Entrepreneur Magazine. And he was not really consulting with me as much about Entrepreneur as he was about just the whole process and the whole philosophy and ideology, but is such a distinctively different perspective than any and all the other. And I'd studied, engaged, retained, researched, 50 different copywriting quote-unquote experts back then, trying to figure out what the meaning of life was. He was a really profound person. And it was so interesting because he understood it at such a seminal level And it, I mean, when you read his work, which I'm hopeful everybody on this call gets, they all get a copy of the book.
They have,
and they all got the video. You realize two things. I mean, you got to read the book. I mean, he talks about his 33 minute segments that he used to work to craft his and construct his ads. But you got to realize the guy understood it at such an intricate level that it can seem daunting if you try to eat the elephant in one fell swoop.
Right.
Yeah. He really got a lot of things. I think the gentleman that just talked was Ed Kenny, a very bright man, very well-worded explanation. But I think that the corollary to that is he also understood that you got to figure out you can't harness it if you don't figure out where people are at on the continuum. And I think that's equally as important. I think a lot of people delude themselves by assuming people either are further along in their felt need or want or understand more what the result or the benefit is. And I think he's really was he nailed it by understanding that the first step is really knowing where they are, where their state of awareness is, and that there's a decisively different way to deal with each element or each gradient in it.
I agree. I think he was the first. I mean, other people sort of in a vague way knew that's a question you should ask. Well, what's the state of awareness, or how much does the prospect know about the product? But he was the first one to break it down analytically. And this is on page 13 of the book, and everyone has a copy of the book. And he outlines that there were basically five states of awareness, and you have to figure out first and foremost where your customer is. And to run through them briefly, state number one, he says, the customer knows of your product, what it does, and wants it. An example might be doing a double postcard to sell a subscription to Newsweek. You're figuring in that format, the double postcard, the person pretty much knows what Newsweek is. You don't have to sell all the benefits or explain it. They know whether they want it or not, and the postcard just makes an easy offer that'll get them to order. That's why double postcards seem to be used primarily with magazines that are very familiar. You rarely see them used with publications that are new or complex or that the reader doesn't know. So number one state of awareness, and again, you can follow this on starting on page 13, is the customer knows of your product, and he knows what it does, and he knows he wants it. Step number two is the customer knows of the product but does not yet want it. A good example might be a lot of people with a BlackBerry. You know, most people by now have heard the term BlackBerry, and they, you know, from Research in Motion, they know someone who has it. But they often say to the person, "I say, well, why do you have that? Why would I want that?" So they don't yet want it, but they know about it. Stage three, according to Gene, was the customer wants what the product does, but does not know there is a product that can do it for him. The good example is I have a program on my computer called SpyBot that wipes out all this spyware. You know, when you download images and go on websites, not only does it give you cookies, but it gives you spyware, which sort of programs you don't want that reside in your hard drive. And I knew I didn't want those programs, but I did not know there was such a product, that there were products that eliminate spyware. I knew there were antivirus products, and so I knew that I wanted what the product did, but I didn't know there was such a product to do it for me. Stage number four in the continuum is the product has, as Gene put it, the product has a need, not a desire, but does not realize your product can meet the need. And stage number five of awareness was that the prospect is not aware of the need or desire, or will not admit it. In other words, they don't know they have the problem, or they don't know it's serious, or they don't know it's important, or they have it, maybe it's like bad breath, but they won't admit it. And I think he was the first to analyze it in quite that way. Now, Sandy, did you know Gene? Did you guys work with him all? People listening to call, Sandy is a marketing director at Agora Publishing, which is a publisher of newsletters and conferences and reports and books in health and travel and investments. Sandy works in the investment area. What's your involvement?
I never, unfortunately, got to meet Gene personally, but being in this business for 15 years, you know about him, and you've seen packages. In fact, the one package that really brought him to me was the package where it was a number 10, and the teaser coupler on the outside was you could melt fat away just by rubbing your stomach. And I thought, to me, that was so intriguing that I actually sat down and tried to rub my stomach and melt my fat away. But that was the kind of copy that he was producing, was really being able to go, wow, you know, I need to see what this product is all about. And it was always at Agora, you couldn't go about writing copy or commissioning copywriter without someone saying, well, we ought to see what Gene Schwartz is writing. Let's see what he's doing. He was always the standard to be held up to.
And what attracted you to that? I think I remember that package. It was melt fat by rubbing your stomach.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what do you think made that package work so well? And I know it did work very well.
It did work very, very well. I think it's just like we're saying, it's pulling out, you know, that hidden desire that, you know, he's tapping into that thing that you didn't even really know was there, and so he was able to bring that out just by having that kind of copy, that teaser, and then when you open it up and you read in there and you find out this is really possible. And I believe the product was some kind of Chinese thing. I can't quite remember.
It was a book, I believe, on Chinese medicine,
right,
which was the first book published by Gene when he went into the book publishing business under his Instant Improvement imprint.
It's a book by a guy named Dr. Chang, and I believe it sold in excess of 1 million copies.
It was
all by mail.
It was absolutely incredible.
Yep.
Now, it's interesting when you say melt fat by rubbing your stomach. It's a technique he did discuss in the book. He said if you can demonstrate in your copy, it's much more powerful than just saying or stating. And there's a section in the book where he basically says how to make two advertising claims do the work of four and double the persuasive power of every marketing claim in your copy. And he said, and then he goes on to say the way to make these claims richer or give them more depth is to create pictures and use images. And let me give you an example. I mean, there's a claim that for an Agora product, International Living, which is very appealing and very straightforward. And the claim is retire overseas for $800 a month, which is a clear benefit, and it's interesting and intriguing. But most of the people on the call have probably seen this letter. But let me read just the beginning of the letter that Bill Bonner wrote to launch this publication. It does not, by the way, at the top above the salutation say, retire overseas for $800 a month, which I think is a headline many copywriters who were at a level lower than Gene or Bill would have used. Instead, it says, you look out your window past your gardener who is busily pruning the lemon, cherry, and fig trees amidst the splendor of gardenias, hibiscus, and hollyhocks. The sky is clear blue. The sea is a deeper blue, sparkling with sunlight. A gentle breeze comes drifting in from the ocean, clean and refreshing, as your maid brings you breakfast in bed. For a moment, you think you have died and gone to heaven, but this paradise is real and affordable. In fact, it costs only half as much to live in the streams lifestyle as it would to stay in your own home. So that's a great example of the technique Gene talked about of creating an image or a picture. Now, Ken, is this a kind of technique that you ever use in any of your web work these days? Well, because on the web, I guess you can just show whatever you want.
Well, the web's just a distribution mechanism.
Right.
It's really no different than mail. It has a few different features, but it's the same. It's the same as print. In fact, it's closer to print than television. Something important, probably the second most important thing that I got from Gene's work, and that applies to exactly what you're saying. He says something else very interesting. He says, don't create demand. He also said, don't write copy.
Now, what did he mean by that?
What he said is what good copywriting is assembling ideas and words and combining words and ideas and pictures in unique ways. So he says, look, all this stuff is already out there. All the material that you need is in the product that you're writing about. Learn everything you can about the product, and that's also one of Gene's keys to his success. I mean, nobody researched a book and went and worked through a book more carefully than he. then he would take all that material, sort of like soup, and he'd stir it up in his unconscious mind, and ideas would combine in unique ways. So this idea, for example, of rubbing your belly or making fat disappear, which we all want, and then combining that with this simple act of rubbing your belly. It's a very unique combination of ideas. He would say, I didn't create that. It was already in the book, and I just combined it. I used something in a headline once that helped me build the seminar business the most recently. I was facing the challenge of the fact that in internet marketing, basically, you know, just about anybody can put up a shingle and say they're the world's leading authority in internet marketing. There's really no standards, and there's hundreds, if not thousands, of people making the claim. And how do you get through that noise? So I wrote this headline, who else wants a proven system that turns raw ideas into solid businesses and solid businesses into raging cash machines in days and weeks instead of years? And the Gene Schwartzism in there is raging cash machines. I mean, we all know the phrase raging rivers, and we all heard the...
It's an image.
It's an image. It's a cash machine that's just going out of control. And that is an example of combining, and that just popped into my mind one day, and I liked it, and I used it, and apparently people are responding to it. And it's a combination of two things that were already out there, this image of a raging river and this image of a cash machine, and somehow they just came together in my mind. I put them out there in the headline, and created a lot of readership, and it's created a very loyal following for me.
Now, Sandy had mentioned the promo, Dr. Chang, which was a famous one. Mm-hmm. You'd been involved with Gene for a long time. Did you any of his promotions that were your favorites or most memorable, any headlines?
Well, it's interesting. Long before I met him, I got the solicitation for it was Stephen Chang.
Right.
I got that in the mail somehow, and I ordered the book. And I actually went and met Dr. Chang once, took a class with him. So in terms of having an impact on my life, that was a big one. He wrote so much stuff, by the way, you realize.
Chang or Gene?
No, Gene.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just mountains and mountains and mountains of stuff. And one very unusual thing about him, many copywriters will suggest, and I don't think it's a bad idea, to keep all the things that you write and also collect things that other people write. Gene was very unusual in that apparently he didn't do that. He would start with the product, and he would start from ground zero. And he would pull all his ideas and images and positionings from the product itself. So that it's sort of a radically different approach than most of us have been tutored on, but I think there's a lot of validity there and a lot of power there. It keeps you from coasting, you know, which is a big danger in every field.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'll just pull something out of the file and, you know, rearrange it and put it out there. And that may work in a lot of cases. But, again, remember the title of this book, Breakthrough Advertising. These are the tools that you take out when you're trying to do something incredibly difficult, like establish a brand-new business from scratch or go into an incredibly complicated competitive field with lots of savvy competitors.
Now, let me stay on that for a minute. You mentioned one of the things that you're doing these days is positioning. Why should that be hard to say? Positioning yourself as an expert in internet marketing, and you said the one negative is that there's a lot of people doing that, and we all do get a lot of stuff. Now, Jay is also somewhat involved in this. I've seen materials from him. So let me ask you first. What in Gene Schwartz in Breakthrough Advertising can help someone on this call who's in a similar situation? They're going into a market where there is a lot of competition,
mm-hmm.
And maybe the competition isn't as good as you are, but it's very difficult for the ignorant prospect to differentiate. What in Gene Schwartz helps you break through and succeed in a market with heavy competition?
Well, two things. Number one, I changed my tone. Okay, so what do I mean by that? The market is at a place right now where it's driven by very excited hyperbolic claims. Promises, all kinds of amazing promises. And so if you read the copy for the system seminar letter, my headline is somewhat arresting, but once you get into the copy itself, it's very calm. Now, it's filled with little cognitive explosions every couple of sentences, you know, things that will get people thinking and get people excited, but the tone of it is very calm. So it was simply contrasting, not going down the same path as the 99,000 other people in the field, but changing the tone. So that speaks to Gene's talking about markets going through evolution, mm-hmm. going through different stages. The other thing that I did in my letter, which is a little different, is I just, and this came from Gene too, I loaded the letter with proof. Tons of testimonials, very detailed testimonials. I would even give some mini lessons within the letter itself so people would get actual content and get a taste of the experience of, you know, using the internet skillfully. They'd get it right in the letter itself. And Gene was very big on that. He one of the things he said that was just so fascinating when it comes to selling books, the letter is actually part of the book in his mind. It's an extension. It's the arm that comes out of the book and reaches into the marketplace and touches people on the shoulder. So you can actually start getting people educated and excited and driven to get the whole picture by giving them little pieces of it throughout. So basically, changing my tone and working like a madman to put every conceivable demonstration and proof in the letter so that readers could say, ah, he's making very amazing claims, but look, everything's backed up. It's all airtight. It's all solid. And that was another characteristic of Gene's writing. If you ever look at any of his pieces, they're absolutely bulletproof. If he makes a claim, he's backing it up somehow, usually with something very, very substantial.
I'm going to come back to that in a minute, the backing up of claims. But Sandy, let me put the same question to you. You're in a field also where there is heavy competition. You're selling investment advice, mainly newsletters, and you know Hulbert's Financial Digest rates 160 stock market newsletters, and there are more than that. There are many that he doesn't rate. So what's the key to, and you spend a lot of time and effort on your copy, especially the headlines. So can you give us an idea of what's the key? What are some of the techniques you use, either inspired by Gene or from you know your own experience, that differentiate your products in a field with a lot of competition? Well, how do you break through?
Ken just hit an important point, was just because, and it's true, in the market that we're in, there's a lot of competition, but that isn't necessarily a negative thing because it does give you an insight and a clue to when Gene talks about, you know, the state of awareness of the prospect. And, you know, I think the third state is when they're sophisticated because they see all these things out there. So that gives you a clue as to where your prospect is. And then you just have to do, as Ken says, you change your tone, you change your tactic so that you find something that is different than what everybody else is saying. You know, whether it's in the headline or in your lead, all those things. But these are the clues that you take from the market as to how you have to change your product around and how you're presenting it to them.
Can you give me one or two? Why don't we start with one of your packages, because I know you've got a lot of strong packages out there that's working very well, and what the headline is? That would help different. You know, I want to get a couple of examples of how a good copywriter differentiates a product like a newsletter.
Well, here's an example of a product from Agora where, again, we're in a marketplace where there's a lot of people, and at the time there was a lot of people, a lot of editors making the recommendation that you should be investing in gold. So everybody has heard about gold, gold, gold. So there's nothing new in that topic, but one of the packages that was put out, the headline was Once Outlawed, Now Legal, and it was talking about investing in gold, but the way it was presented was done in a completely new way that seemed so revolutionary, and it was talking about investing in gold coins, and the whole idea was, you know, at one point it was illegal to own gold, but now you could do it. So that was the headline of the copy. Even though here we are mailing this thing when there's everybody else there saying you should be investing in gold, but this was doing it in a much different way.
So you have to, you can figure out the desire or the interest, but you have to represent it in a compelling way.
Right.
Jay, you're known as the master of that, and you have, for many of your clients and many of your own businesses, you know, differentiated products and taken, you know, very different approaches. Can you give an example or two of something that you did that you would say did this successfully, whether it's for coins or investing or whatever?
Bob, I can, but I'm gonna not be rude, but I'm gonna challenge you to complete something that you sort of segued out of about three questions ago because it's very important and it's fundamental to what I do. And
great.
It's I call it future pacing, and you called it something else. But you ask it. You interviewed Ken. He gave sort of an example, and then he had a really profound segue, but we never got back to it. And it'd be a disservice to your listener if you didn't get into this because I use it all the time. The process is to take the first of all, you got to remember, no matter, and this is so fundamental, and it's not necessarily just Gene Schwartz, it's anybody who understands it. Just remember, whatever means you're communicating, direct mail, space, radio, you're talking to one person at a time, and it's you talking to a human being, a man, a woman, a father, mother, husband, with sensitivity, fears, hopes, desires, etc. And that's a general global sort of a concept. Your goal is to animate their spirit by taking them forward into the future, and you can do it two ways, and you should do it two ways, and showing them, first of all, the transactional implication, and that might sound like a highfalutin combination of words, but the transactional implication of how much different their life, their health, their experiences, their joy, their wealth, whatever the heck your product or service is relevant to, will be once they have this working, deployed, working for them. And it's very important. It's how you animate and dimensionalize and give such greater skin and emotion to what you're doing. I'm very lucky. I mean, besides what I do, I've been able to do work for 450 industries, and I've helped companies that have done billions of dollars worth of research. And Tony Robbins was a client of mine for years and years, and he's done all kinds of studies in the way the mind processes. And future pacing is a foundational element of the science of neurolinguistic either conditioning program, whatever the heck you want to call it. There's many subsects of it, but it's a very key way that you motivate people to grasp the advantage, to take action, to move forward or away from something, figuratively speaking. You can also transactionalize the negative. Keep in mind, there's an old adage, it's called grow or die, but that's true of everything, everybody, and every dynamic. Nothing stays constant. You can future pace the situation if you allow the status quo to continue. You know, your assets erode, your wealth becomes, you know, less than capable of supporting you, et cetera, but it's a very key fundamental to everything that I do, Bob. That's the first thing I wanted to say. The second, in answer, because I want to give, because I have a modicum, and I'm not saying this to be crass, but I have a modicum of experience in these fields. You know that, so I want to I'll throw my 2 cents worth in. When you got a really busy, overly competitive environment, changing strategy is certainly the key. But figuring out what strategy is going to be heard and penetrate and be believable is the key. We too have some. You know, I don't purport to be the world's big internet marketer, but we've been very successful translating a lot of our things. And we had 800 people who wanted to spend $5,000 with us for a conference call series about 60 days ago. And the way we did it was deciding we were going to respect their intelligence. We were not going to hyperbolize. We were going to take them on a journey, again, future pacing, to what it would be like in the future, what they would entail. I try to put myself in the mind of, and I'm sure a lot of this was learned from the time I spent with Gene in re-reviewing his material in anticipation of commenting today. It mirrors and confirms that. But I take people on a journey, and I treat them with respect. I respect their intelligence, their emotion. I believe that emotions are such a key. They're a bridge to everything you're going to do, and I want to make certain that everybody understands that. And letting people into the method to your madness, disclaiming if there's a problem, like you're talking about, how do you counter program against enormously competitive environment, i.e. the internet marketing experts, and I agree with Ken, there's only 9 million of them. How do you discriminate? Well, the first thing I think you do is you acknowledge and disclaim. You say, before I start, let's understand, you want an internet marketing expert, you can go online and search and find 10 million of them. And they all purport to have the same instantaneous trillion-dollar, idea-generating capability, and maybe they do and maybe they don't, but let me give you a counter perspective, and you've already preempted yourself just by acknowledging the truth, if that makes sense.
That's interesting, and that brings us to another topic. The going back to the competition. On page 14 of the book, Gene tells how to integrate this state of awareness concept into his headline writing process, and he says you have to know three things. Number one, what is the prospect's state of awareness, which we discussed. Number two, what is the mass desire that drives the purchase of this product? You know, people want to be secure, they want to be rich. And number three, what is the competition? And then he says on page 175, that there's five basic ways to at least to deal with the competition. Let me give them and get the reaction of the group. Number one, he says, product superiority. You have a great product. And the example I thought of was the Harry and David's catalog copy, where the competition is other fruit. There's a line in one of the catalogs about how big the grapes are, and it says makes store-bought grapes look like birdseed. Everybody knows this, Harry and David's, the pears, they're so special or whatever word they use, that you should eat them with a spoon. And there's a picture of a pear on a china plate with a silver spoon, which is not how most of us eat pears. So number one, product superiority. Number two, superiority of promise. And this, Sandy, might be, you know, something you do in the financial area. You know, we're going to make you $80,000 richer than your friends and neighbors. Number three is the role of the product in your life, which I think is a little bit, I think it's related to future pacing. What will your life be like when you, let's say, own a Jaguar or, you know, a Mercedes-Benz or, get your hair transplant and you look handsome or you lose the weight? Then he said there's one up the competition, which is to escalate your claims so that it's superior to competing products. And then the fifth he says is direct attack, which, you know, just brand A versus brand B, name the competitor and compare feature for feature. And we've seen ads like that where, you know, there's two products and there's a column of features and your product says yes, 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 and the other products only have a few yeses checked off. Do you think that adequately describes the way Gene was so successful? And let me ask this of Ken first. Do you think that adequately describes the way Gene was so successful in beating all his competitors? Because most of the packages he wrote and most of the ads he wrote outperformed other ads for that product and outperformed other ads in that category. Or did he teach you another trick, Ken, for destroying, as he called it, destroying and devastating the competition in a totally honest and ethical fashion, and quoting from the book, so that your prospect believes only your product and no other will meet his needs? That, he said, is the goal.
Well, you usually have competition in anything that you're selling, unless you're at the stage of it's a brand new product.
Right.
So you're always having to deal with that in one way or another, whether you name the competition or not. When he would talk about an attack, so it didn't necessarily mean specifically naming other brands or other companies. It was more sort of painting the black and white, good and evil, fight to the death kind of thing, where the product is the hero.
Mm-hmm.
And he had sort of a pattern of present the bad, then present the hero, what the hero would do, and the hero will do for you, and what the hero will allow you to experience. Then present some more bad, and then bring the hero back again. And that alternation between good and evil, black and white, hero and anti-hero, I think is another way to approach attacking. You're not attacking necessarily another company, but you're attacking the problem. You're naming the problem. For instance, in health situations, let's say somebody has arthritis or some other common ailment. You know in advance that the bulk of your buyers are people that have tried every single conceivable thing in the world. So what you're attacking at that point is all the other stuff that didn't work. And now you're positioning your product as the man on the white horse who rides into this mess, and he's actually going to solve the problem finally. The product's actually going to, you know, bring you relief. So I don't think he necessarily always meant in the attack mode that you're attacking a company, but you are definitely, most definitely, positioning your product as the white horse.
Now, you give the example of the arthritis, and you astutely point out that if someone's doing buying arthritis product, or they're responding to a weight loss ad, is an equally good valid example, that they probably tried everything on the market, mm-hmm. and nothing has worked. So how do you work that in your copy? And the same thing might be in internet marketing. You know, they've already, before they come to you, they've already taken 20 courses and read 15 e-books on how to get rich on the internet, and they're still not rich on the internet.
Absolutely. It's the same phenomenon. The vast majority of my customers have already made significant investments in all kinds of internet stuff. It's sort of what I was talking about before. In the letter, I demonstrate, and this is something that Gene would do too, I would demonstrate something new that they'd never thought of, what Jay was talking about earlier, bringing something, you know, brand new, a new perspective, a new vision for themselves that nobody else has given them. See, in the internet space, it nobody really was talking to the customers. Everybody was yelling at them and telling them about all the great things that they were going to do for them, but nobody, you know, sat down with them at the kitchen table and said, "Hey, look, I know you've had a lot of problems with this stuff, and let me explain why you've had the problems. This thing that everybody's touting doesn't work, and here's why it doesn't work, and here's what works instead." So that, and I would put that right in the letter. I would give actual meat in the letter that they could use. So I was demonstrating my sort of hero role for my product right there, right? I mean, live. Mm-hmm. Here it is. I'm going to solve problems for you in this letter. And then a percentage of those people say, "Wow, you know, if this gets solved in the sales letter, I wonder what the heck's going on in the product," which is another foundation to Gene's technique. He would fascinate you into buying. He would load up so many interesting things and pose so many questions and leave so many things dangling that you would just be forced, if you had a pulse, to want to get the product and see what the heck was in it.
And you also mentioned his technique of making it worthwhile just to read the promotion, learning something to just by reading the promotion, whether you own the product or not.
I think I just want to just say quickly, I think that that's an important thing that we're talking about here is the learning experience that the prospect goes through as they're reading the copy. Mm-hmm. I think when we talk about trying to devastate or destroy your competition, you don't have to name them in your promotion. But if your reader feels like they have learned something new, they've got that awe factor, these people, they really know something.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you destroy your competition, because naturally they want to get what you have, because you've brought something new. You've taught that person something, even if it's in the promotion. If they have that experience in the promotion, the experience that they're going to have with your product is even going to be that much greater.
An example of this that just popped into my mind, a very odd example for me to cite in an audience of direct marketers, Duncan Hines was running years ago an ad for its chocolate cake mix in one of the Ladies Home Journal or one of those, and I remember the headline was "The Secret to Richer, Moister Chocolate Cake." And there was even a little recipe in there, how to use their mix and make a cake. So you got the feeling that even if I don't buy their product, I'm going to learn something just by reading this ad. And I, you know, and it ran for several years. So let's go back let's go on rather. You show through this future pacing. Gene kind of called it role playing. He said you have to figure out the desire of your prospect to act out certain roles in his life. He or she wants to be successful or wants to be a business owner. But then he has a section in the book where he says how to strengthen your prospect's desire to own the product. We talked about that you don't create the desire, but he says you have to strengthen the desire to own the product. And he gives, starting on page 77, 13 ways. And I'll just run through them very quickly. Number one, describe the product and its benefits. Number two, put the product in action. That's sort of that future pacing, show it in operation. Number three, put the reader into the action. Again, sort of the future pacing. Number four, show him how to demonstrate the product. Number five, like rub your tummy and get rid of pain or lose weight. Number five, stretch out the benefits into time. Take this future pacing and don't do it just in the immediate future, but show how, you know, how your life will improve, you know, over the long term. Number six, bring in an audience, which he defined as case histories and testimonials. Number seven, get testimonials from experts in the field, like if you're doing a health product, a doctor or a scientist or a nutritionist. Number eight, compare and contrast against the competition, which we've discussed. Number nine, point out a weakness, and we were just talking about this, and show how you solve it. Number 11, dramatize the facts. Number 12, summarize the benefits, when you, especially when you close your copy, what you get. And number 13, close with a guarantee. What, Ken, what do you think is the most valuable thing you learned from Gene in to intensify the prospect's desire to buy from you? Because we all know that we go to prospects and they have a desire, but often the desire as it exists in them is not enough to get them to take action.
One of the reasons he gives so many different ways to intensify is he points out, and I think he's completely accurate, is that in order to get somebody to take action, you've got to, well, some people are ready to take action right away, which he fully, you know, admits.
Right.
But then there's those other parts of the market that need a lot of persuading. So you need to provide them with lots and lots of material. The challenge is to keep it fresh and to come at the problem or the question or the challenge from multiple viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
So these 13 suggestions allow you to keep talking, basically, and show the product from all these different angles and all these different perspectives. So I think that he was very concerned about in a letter ever repeating himself.
You mean he did want to, or he didn't?
He
didn't want to repeat. He just wanted to reinforce. So, you know, he didn't want to repeat verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 5, 6, 7 times in a letter. It's okay to make the point, but just reinforce it in a different way so that it sounds new to the prospect.
Yeah.
Now
that's the key. The letter Sandy really referred to this as the letter itself was experienced by the prospects as a benefit, a good, an entertainment, an intrinsically valuable experience. And you, if your letter is just all salesy and all technique and all, you know, push, people aren't going to experience the letter that way. And what Gene would do again is he would learn the product inside and out, and he would just sprinkle it with all this, you know, magic dust, basically, of things that he would find in the book that were fascinating to keep the reader engaged and keep the reader entertained. One of his recommendations is, look, if you're a copywriter, you better be going to all the hit movies and
mm-hmm.
seeing what people are reacting to. You better be reading Vanity Fair and the National Enquirer. And the reason for one of the things that he says actually in the tape, the videotape, which I hope everybody watches many times, is go see Lethal Weapon. And study that movie. And he said basically what that movie is about is a few minutes of dialogue with a car crash, and then a few minutes of dialogue with a bomb going off, and a few minutes of dialogue with a fist fight. And it's those fireworks that are what keep people's attention. And as a copywriter, you've got to be shooting off fireworks constantly throughout the letter. And that's why these 13 tools are so valuable, because it gives you different ways to come at the product from.
So let me ask each of you, put you on the spot a bit. Each of you has worked in markets, Sandy in financial newsletters, again, you in the internet, and Jay has worked in a lot of different areas, the internet and coins, where there are people who have a desire, but because there's so much out there, they only respond to a tiny, tiny fraction of the offers out there. So, you know, in financial newsletters, for example, you know, these people get tons of packages, and they only buy one or two a year. So let me start with Sandy. What's one or two tips or tricks you could give us for intensifying the desire to the point where you get the order?
I think there's a couple things, and as you just mentioned, some of the 13 steps that Gene had, for example, you know, telling people test the claim, and for example, in some of our financial offers, we'll tell people in the copy, paper trade, see for yourself. You know, don't even buy this newsletter right now. Paper trade and see if you can make these profits. So we're kind of saying, putting it right out there to go ahead and test the claim that we're making and see for yourself. We do a lot of compare and contrast. And then we put the product in action. So we show the reader what's going to happen if they have this in their life. So we do a lot of showing as to how the product is going to make a difference in their life. And I think those are the things that, that work best for us or that we've seen.
And Jay, what have you done in this area? I mean, you've done so many successful promotions. Any that particularly that you can focus in on this area of intensifying a mild desire to the point where they have to have it?
I'm going to do something and I drive you crazy, Bob. And
you won't drive me crazy.
Because I've been carrying notes from three conversations down that I wanted to answer, and then Ken hit on it from another angle, and it really is, for me, and I think I would agree with something he said. First of all, you want everyone to watch the video because you're very fortunate that you've got an interview with him that's different on and written. You've got the book that took him Lord knows how many years to experience and how many years to write and to really grasp, but you get to see something that's not demonstrated in the others. I think that, that something he had, which I don't think anyone has picked up on yet, and I want to, and it's something that someone taught me, but it's about five words which were really interesting, and this is also the answer to your last question, but it wasn't designed to be that. The first one he had was a real passion for what he was doing and what it would do for the end user. The next thing is it was evident listening to him that he fell in love with the people that he was trying to write to. The next one was that he had a hopefulness for them, that it was really, that he had a moral obligation. He couldn't not bring this to their attention. The next is he felt, and I'm not nice saying it the way the language of his book might, he felt, man, I'm in your life for, you know, this, you know, 20 minutes. I got to make it better off. I got to do something meaningful. Whether you buy or not, it'll be your ultimate decision. But I'm going to give you the case, and I'm going to really care more about you than anybody else. And finally, that there really is a better way, a different approach. Inherently, everybody believes that there's a better way, that there's a better strategy, there's an easier, faster, safer, more. And he acknowledged and provided it, and he was very heartfelt in his hopefulness. And I think that, frankly, I mean, I got all kinds of answers. I mean, I've done 450 industries, Bob, and I've done tens of thousands of businesses. But I think all the greatest successes that I've ever had stemmed for this. When I was working for a client, I didn't fall in love with the client. I didn't fall in love with their product or their business. I fell in love with the people they were serving, and I was their advocate, their champion. And I think it's a mindset. And when I watch that video, and I really pray everybody on this call watches it, I got that element. And I would be remiss if I didn't try to, because I think it's a nuanced subtlety, but I think it's so profoundly important. And you may disagree, but I got to make that point.
No, I do agree. Although, tell me that you didn't fall in love with Icy Hot. I think you like that one.
Let me tell you what I fell in love with. No. I got, when I started that, let me challenge you. When I started that, it was a $20,000 a year, little strainful, little neon, little fledging company. We got it to $13-15 million in about a year, and it went on to, you know, to I don't know, $50 or $100 million, and it was sold. But the truth of the matter, I fell in love with the letters of appreciation we got from little old men or women who couldn't get up and work in their garden, or couldn't go to church on Sunday, or couldn't ride to their children's homes in the car, or couldn't sleep at night, but now could because of this blessed relief. I fell in love with the fact that we had a chance to make a difference. And I think Gene made a point also in one section of the book, I don't remember where, that he said something to the effect of, you know, you really got to be, he was talking about if you could write this great claims, but the product couldn't live up to it. Send the copy to the manufacturer, the company, and say, "Can you deliver on this? Re-engineer your product." And I think that, I mean, the greatest marketing I've ever done for clients was not for them; it was for the people who were the beneficiaries. I would fall in love, and I always tried to get every client I've ever had, everyone I've ever counseled, everyone who's ever come to my seminars, to redirect their focus and fall in love with the people they were dealing with, because I always felt when you do that, you realize you have a moral obligation. If your product or service at work in the lives of those people or those companies, whatever the buyer is, made that big of a difference. You had a moral obligation to do everything in your power, humanly possible, to get it in their hands, to get it in their lives. And it drives an incredible, I mean, all the things that Gene says are so profound, but one of the things he says, which is more, is that, you know, some of the greatest breakthroughs are going to come when you get away from it. It's not when you're sitting really at the screen for your 33-33. It's when you're riding your bike or when you're watching a movie or when you're relaxing. And that's not going to happen, in my mind, if your premise, if your basis, if your focus, if your intent isn't right. I'm just sort of sharing some secrets that I've been privy to, but I think that when you watch, you know, I always like, it's like, I'm always interested in what's not said that's like the real cohesive force that you sort of, it's a nuance and a subtlety that really is there and it really makes a big difference, but most people don't see it.
Understood. Absolutely.
I'm going to go get some water for 1 minute because I've said more than my two cents worth, and I apologize if
now,
I got you off point.
Let me point out, I've learned that when you do a teleconference, and we're almost at the end, it is very important to cover all the bulleted points you do in your promotion. However, in this series, we're all going to be on the four calls. So given the time, I want to do the last bullet. We've done, if people have the invitation handy, we've done the five states of prospect awareness and how to capitalize on it with Gene's easy three-step headline writing process, which you can see on page 13 and 14, but we discussed that. We talked about how to make two advertising claims do the work of four with images and pictures, and that's discussed on the book on page 200. You should look at that. We've talked about how to position yourself against the competition, the five ways, and that's, you can read in detail on page 175 of the book. Now, we also talked about the 13 ways to strengthen the prospect's desire, and you can see those and go over those on page 77. I want to save how to build a saleable personality into your product, just like the big national advertisers, which is on page 107. You can read it before the next call, and then we'll lead with that and start with the rest of the agenda. But I do want to talk about one other item. He talks about in the book how to use metaphor, analogy, and imagination to present products' benefits much more powerfully than with a straightforward, realistic approach. Ken, do you use that technique, or have you used it and found that to work? In other words, instead of just being straightforward, to use a metaphor, analogy, a visual, or image, does that work in the kind of thing you're selling?
Absolutely. You know, let's just use the raging cash machines.
That's a great example.
You know, also talking about raw ideas into solid businesses, you know, visceral. Try to make it as visceral as possible.
And it's a visual word.
Yeah, and again, his method for doing that, he would say, I didn't create this stuff. I merely took the stuff from the product and recombined it in a different format.
Sandy, do you ever do that in promotions for financial services? Do newsletters lend itself to that kind of thing?
Absolutely. We do it all the time. And to take it just a little step further, we not only do it in the promotions, but we actually use that in the actual editorial itself. So, I mean, as Ken just used the word visceral, we're always striving for that. And I remember an article that was done in one of the financial newsletters, and the lead of it was kind of rude, but it basically was saying, if you had a boil festering on your arm, would you get a knife and cut it off yourself? No, you would go to a doctor. And it was trying to make the point, you know, we're going to give you these really great investments, but it was just made that huge image in their mind and, you know, it kind of forced them to read on, and that was in the editorial. So we're not only doing it in promotions, we're doing it in the editorial itself because, you know, editorial is the written word as well. We're putting the ideas down on paper there.
That's a great example. And Sandy, let me do this with each of the group with you. Any last comments or things you'd like to comment on about Gene Schwartz copywriting and his breakthrough advertising methods?
I think one of the important things is to remind everybody that, you know, the product is important and they have to really get to know it inside and out, and that's the kind of stuff that Gene would do. So he would know that product very intimately. He studied it. And that's how he, by knowing that product, is how he could become part of that market and understand where they are, what state in the market are they, what stage, by knowing that product that well. And I think that's critically important.
great point. Ken, same question to you. Anything else you'd like to add about breakthrough advertising, lessons learned?
I'm just going to briefly follow up on something that Jay said because it's so important. The secret to Gene's success was his dedication to his craft. It was his enthusiasm for life. He was an enthusiastic guy. His generosity with that enthusiasm and his empathy for people. And these are all qualities that everybody listening to this call can cultivate and develop. You know, we live in kind of a jaded, cynical, I'll get by with the minimum kind of society, unfortunately. And if you aspire to be a great copywriter and make a lot of money, leave mediocrity behind. Look at the life of Gene Schwartz. Look at the kind of person he was, and that will fuel excellence in your copy.
Great. And Jay, you've had a lot of good observation. Any closing thoughts?
Yeah. And I've got an advantage. Well, Ken probably does too, but I probably have a little different advantage than most because I started really working with operating businesses, and then I started teaching it. And I realized that you listening, each one of you have an opportunity of a lifetime to read the book. See, let me stop. I learned my trade a really interesting way. I would get books of the great copywriters. I would then get books written about their lives by third-party biographers. I would then get books about the people who employed them, so you'd see contrast and you could see correlation and truth or fiction. Well, you've got and it made a great difference in understanding and really understanding reality and context and dimension. Here, you've done it. Whoever packaged this, I mean, what a great gift. You've got the quintessence of a man's life preserved, first of all, in a book that every time you read it, it should open up vistas if you relegate it to your subconscious and you work on it. Number two, you got an interview that he did that has been edited and transcribed in a written form. Number three, you got a totally different interview that shows the man's dimension. And all I would say, because so many people don't really, they've not disciplined themselves to grasp. If they hear something, it sounds the same, but it's nuanced, they sort of discount. They don't want to take the time. I'll pick a video or the book, or I'll take the short course and I'll read the little summarized other interview. And I would say, first of all, read the book one time. Listen, when Bob says on page 13, go to it, circle it. The moment this is done, don't go to your, you know, watch the movie or dinner. Allocate an hour or two so you can reflect. Take notes and think about what was said. Go back and read the sections, the pages, the chapters. That's how it'll come alive. That's how a man who generated billions of dollars attempt to transfer and translate and gift to you his genius will really take root, and it'll make a difference. That's all I have to say.
That's a great comment, and I agree with it. But next call, by the way, we're going to talk a little bit about a plan of study for the book and the video, although I am also going to cover in the next call how I think you could master the essence of it, sort of the short course, in about 45 minutes of reading, and I'll tell you which portions of the book I think will do that for you. Will, do you want to close? Any comments?
No, I think I just want to thank everyone, and I think it's I really enjoyed it. I hope everyone else did.
Great. Well, thanks, folks. We appreciate having you. I want to thank the guests, Sandy, Ken, and Jay, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.